What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Roman. What is Roman? It's ED med, guys. It's ED. Listen, talking about erectile dysfunction is not easy. Usually we just brush it off, blame ourselves, saying things like, oh, I lost my mojo, or avoid it altogether with excuses like I had a long day at work, or I'm just not feeling it, etc. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about. With a real doctor who can prescribe real medications. It's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. The doctor will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and discreet. Getting started is simple.
And go to GetRoman.com/tire for a free online visit and two-day shipping.
ED used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/tire today. Go to GetRoman.com/tire today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/tire. GetRoman.com/tire. We are also brought to you by Ritual. Get this. Ritual is a ritual for you and your health, right? Ritual is a subscription vitamin plan that is designed for you and your health. Men's diets are way behind where they probably should be. Over 70% of men don't get enough vitamin E, and 97% of men don't get enough vitamin D from their diet. I know I personally didn't get enough vitamin D, even though, like, I live and work in the sun half the time. But my doctor even prescribed me, like, a ton of extra vitamin D. But fundamentally, some men, and I put myself here, overvalue exercise and undervalue nutrition. And they think, if I look healthy, I am healthy. But there's more to health than meets the eye. Ritual is introducing Essential for Men, the obsessively researched multivitamin that's formulated to help fill nutritional gaps in men's diets. I started taking multivitamins a couple years ago, and it really has helped me with my recovery. It helps me when I can't eat all the vegetables I need to eat when I'm on the road. It helps me keep my immune system good, especially that vitamin D right now. And this stuff is really, really ideal for these purposes. Ritual's your new type of two-a-days from helping support heart health, normal muscle function, and normal immune function. This tiny step can have a big impact. And this subscription-based supplement is easy to start and easy to snooze. It's only about $1 a day to have essential nutrients delivered to your door. And here's where the delivery system is good. I almost always run out of my vitamins. I just don't make time to go buy more before I run out. Ritual solves that. They send more to you before you run out. Step up your nutrient game with Essential for Men. 10% off your first 3 months when you visit ritual.com/TST and start your ritual today. That's 10% off during your first 3 months at ritual.com/TST. 10% off for your first 3 months at ritual.com/TST.
Okay, on this episode of the show, a very cool guest. I haven't talked to this dude in a while. It just came up kind of last minute, but he's a really interesting guy. Michael Bream is the founder and I think CEO of EV West, a company that builds and converts electric cars down in San Diego area. They have done some really cool street cars. They've done some really cool race cars. They've raced at Pikes Peak. And pretty soon they are going to Bonneville with their newest project. So here to talk about it on the Zoom, the CEO of EV West, Michael Bream, on the Smoking Tire Podcast. I've already done it. I've done it in the unawkwardness of my own home. How are you?
Fantastic. Good to see you. Yeah.
What's, since we last talked, there's been quite a lot of development in the world of EV hot rodding. You can buy EV crate motors now. I mean, yeah, that, right? You know, what a world, right?
What does that mean? That it comes in a crate or?
Well, I don't know. You tell me. Have you bought one of these things? I mean, GM brought that that electric crate motor to SEMA, and I assume you took some kind of interest in it, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. We actually have EV West parts in there.
And, cool.
I think, you know, the reality is they try to make it come off and sound simple and bolt in. But it's quite difficult. And a lot of these guys are just kind of in the space to get attention. Yamaha Motors recently kind of did something like that. Like they're putting out a crate motor and we called Yamaha and they're like, oh no, it's not. It's really just something we put out there. They actually openly admitted. Wow. They're like, it's our fishing lure. We just threw it in the pond.
Dude, you know what? This is such bullshit because you know how often I hear from people who want me to comment on the fact that, oh, the new cafe standards are impossible. It's like, do you know how easy it is to say that we're going to go full EV by 2030 yeah. and then roll that shit back in 2025 when no one even remembers. And you know how long that is in our news cycle? Oh, anyone God. Can say anything. And the news cycle is so short that by the time you walk it back later, once it's clearly impossible, just nobody gives a shit yeah, anymore.
The crate engine is going to have Bluetooth. It's going to work on blockchain, and everything's going to be great.
And you put Bitcoin in it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting, Matt. I was just thinking about that the other day. Like, if somebody could do like a best hits reel and just go back through like all the GM announcements, and I mean, I feel like we've been told like 3 or 4 times from every automaker they're having an electric truck or this, that, or the other thing, and here it is, 2020, and. Where are they, right?
Well, Rivian is onto something, right? Isn't it? We're Rivian is a real product. We're going to see. Are we going to? I mean, that's a good point. You cannot buy it.
You cannot buy it, and they don't have a fat. I love Rivian. Let me tell you, I love Rivian. I think they've got the best shot of anyone, but they don't even have a factory built yet.
Do you think they have a better shot of building a truck than Tesla does? Do we want to dive into this early?
I wanted to dive into
EV crate motors, but
it's important to note that building an electric truck or a heavy duty vehicle is extremely difficult and extremely expensive. And so this isn't a Model 3 or a Kia Niro or whatever they're trying to bring to market. They're trying to bring a full-size truck and compete with, you know, the Ford F-150, Silverado, et cetera. That is, no small task.
No, yeah.
And again, we're talking about essentially startup companies that to this date haven't produced anything. And I think Rivian is far, far, far ahead of everyone. But you look at companies like Nikola and some of the other companies that are essentially trying to get venture capital off of computer renders.
The Nikola one was like the every single thing about it from A to Z seems like utter horseshit. Everything. like just in a casual reading one article about it, you go, oh, well that's bullshit. And yeah. And yet someone is out there going, you know, with one of those dollar bill stripper guns, just over the place. It's wild.
Because they've changed their powertrain idea like a couple times last few years, right? Wasn't it initially going to be a fuel cell semi truck, and then they pivoted to electric from hydrogen, and then just a few months ago they announced they're going to make a pickup truck. But I was researching it for a different story, and it was like, oh, they haven't actually delivered a single vehicle yet. Yeah. And that was like kind of the mind blowing part is they keep rolling out these renders.
I mean, EV West has delivered more vehicles than all those guys combined. Yes. We've delivered more vehicles than Rivian, than Nikola, than Endurance, Hummer.
So wait, let's circle back. You have a point, and you do win there. Yes. Aside from Tesla and some major OEMs, you have delivered more EVs than a lot of people with big valuations. That is true. Yeah. Why? Let's go back to why an electric crate motor is so much harder than it sounds.
The battery, to make it short, you know, integration, all of these, you know, we're typically trying to convert older cars, right? And as we say, there's not a single right angle or a square angle anywhere in an older car. And so you're putting batteries that for the most part have a square form factor into cars that, you know, are curved and have, you know, body panel surfaces and things like that. And it's heavy. And these cars were designed with their weight distribution, axle loads, and all that without a battery in mind. And the battery is the single heaviest, single largest element of electric conversion. So to really be successful, you kind of have to go to square one like Tesla did. And that's why they're doing so well, because they didn't try and take a Spark or a Sonic or whatever and electrify it, right? They literally just opened SolidWorks, clicked new file, and started going for it. And I think that's why it's so heavy. So you get this, you know, pick any car, like a Volvo P1800, right? Great car. Where do you put a battery pack in that, right? So you really got to, you know, flex the engineering muscle a little bit and be a little creative, and also work with components that are some of the best in class. Some of the smallest, most powerful, lightest components are what these older cars really need, because they don't have the modern suspension, brakes, et cetera.
Right.
You know, late models.
You also have to upgrade a bunch of that stuff too, I imagine.
Now
you've got power.
It depends. There's a big split in the road. You know, the first thing you want to ask customers, like, what are you looking for? What's your range and your power requirements? Because some guys really want to do the resto mod. They want to do the 911 with the Tesla, you know, drive kit in it. And other guys, like we had Dr. Stefan Pierce here from Porsche. He came into our shop and he drove several different vehicles. His favorite vehicle was about a 70 horsepower electric 912 that we did. It still had the gearbox. Tons of fun, you know, 120 foot-pounds of torque, so, you know, lots of low-end.
Yeah, more than a 912.
But he loved it. You know, he just lit up because he could shift, and it kind of was familiar to him. And it wasn't just getting in this, you know, with the Tesla conversions, you don't have the gearbox, so it's right. Kind of like just a, you know, crazy fast golf cart.
Yeah.
Gas and brake, no shifting at all, no drive engagement, yeah.
When you're working with an older car, if you were working with, like, I mean, I'm sure you, if you're working with a car that's a body on frame type car, what if you worked with like Art Morrison to make a replacement chassis that was more battery friendly than the OEM chassis? Would something like that work?
I think so, but I think where we go is, you know, take the 911 market, because it's a classic example of that.
Is that a big ask right now?
Would you drop your Safari on a new chassis or do something kind of crazy? You get to a point where you start almost devaluing the car. And so we feel like it's our engineering responsibility to integrate things that go in seamlessly into the car and don't require any altercation, right? So we call it a reversible kit, right, or bolt-in. So it's kind of like putting a wheel on your car. You can bolt the ugliest wheels on your car ever, and somebody's like, oh, dude, those are bad. And you can just take them off. It doesn't actually devalue the car, right? And we're coming out of this era, maybe, late 90s, 2000s, where guys were doing these conversions, but they were using these big, heavy lead acid batteries, you know, and you'd see them running around a Volkswagen Beetle and the whole rear is just gutted. And it's a rack of literally like 1200 pounds of batteries and the tires are bulging out. You know, it's just crazy dangerous, right? But that's what they were doing back in the day to kind of have that fuel freedom. It was more of a anti-OPEC thing than it was a performance thing, or really some guys were doing it for environmental reasons, but I think for the most part, people were just trying to get away from that foreign dependency.
Now, I think aren't we seeing it to almost improve drivability, as well as to maybe make a bit of a social statement, have something that's a little different, you know,
probably 10 bullet points, really.
Yeah. I mean,
that just, it's so nice when you're road tripping, you don't have the noise. The cost, you know, supercharging and charging at home. We've got solar panels at our house and we overproduce, so we literally don't pay to drive at all. And you could keep going on and on, you know, especially, my wife and I, we got a kid now, so we're a little more concerned, and you read these, links between autism and freeway pollution and all this. And we don't know, the jury's still out there, but like, an anecdote, you know, somewhere was like, you know, at the end of the day, who cares if we cleaned up the earth and did all this stuff and it was all a hoax? We've got a clean earth, you know? And so it's kind of along those lines.
There's not like a lot of downside to clean air.
There's not a lot of downside to it. I mean, you know, I'm not for regulation. I don't think people should be forced into this stuff at all. I really want to see more of this excitement thing. Like, hey, the pool is great. Jump in, guys, you know? And Elon's really done that. You know, a lot of these builds, this land speed record that we're going to be doing, we're running a Tesla motor in that, you know, and we wouldn't have that motor if it wasn't for Elon getting into this, and he got into it because he was forced into it by the CARB, essentially. You know, if that mandate wasn't there, I don't think they would have survived through the early years.
The speaking of which, this this Land Speed car, I only got the very I heard, you know, as you know, we scheduled this yesterday. I look like I've been on vacation for 2 weeks because I have.
Yesterday's and, being generous. I think it was like 10 o'clock last night that I finally responded because, you know, I had the headphones on out there just grinding away, welding, grinding. Oh, man.
And so you'll forgive me for not being prepared with the total details, but I heard EV West Bonneville and I was a guest. So let's get Michael on the phone. So
yeah,
so
last time we were together, what we blew up a tranny on a dyno over an Oceanside.
Yeah, right? The Pikes Peak thing. The Pikes Peak car, which was cool. And if I recall, it did the video did a pretty decent amount of views.
Yeah,
and so ever since, when people ask me about, you know, who to go to for electric in California, I've always sent them to you guys.
Thanks.
And I've seen a couple of your cars running around LA, some of the cars and coffees and stuff, but Bonneville is some other shit. Yeah. I went there. I got to go 211 miles an hour in a Volkswagen Jetta.
You got to drive that Jetta.
I drove the Jetta. Yeah. And they went like 209 was the official run. And I was like, I'm going to beat that official number. And so I just kept my foot in it until I saw 211. And fun as hell. For the record, whatever that noise is, if you guys hear it, it's not me.
Is
that your Nextel? Oh, yeah, there you go. Oh, there you go. Whatever that was. Remove the battery with anger.
Nobody's going to call.
Yeah, so what class are you running in? What is the car? How does it work? What's the story?
Right, so Bonneville's kind of like a bucket list thing for me. My dad grew up in West Hollywood and was a hot rod guy. I ran around with, Von Dutch and guys like that, just doing the Hollywood hot rod thing. And so I kind of grew up with that influence and have never really had a chance to go to Bonneville. My dad's been several times with a couple teams and stuff, and it was just one of those things. And we've tried over the past couple of years to put something together. And, you know, honestly, we've just been so busy. It's been tough. This was the year I hang out with a buddy of mine from the skateboard industry. I owned a company back in the day called Gravity Skateboards for about 25 years.
That brand.
That's basically how I got into EV West. When we started EV West in 2009, there was just like no money in EVs. People were like, you're a fool, dude. And so we kind of funded the startup and investment and all that from skateboards. So it's kind of like, you know, green transpo. But anyways.
How cool.
Yeah, you know, kind of got it up and going with that. It eventually, you know, grew to the point where we could run it. But where was I going with that?
Bonneville. Your dad at Bonneville.
Yeah, my dad. Yeah. And so we've been trying in this last year was just kind of finally a point where we had a moment where we could do it. And the skateboard thing was because of Roger Hickey, who's our driver. And, you know, he's one of these guys that I met through skateboarding. He's been setting skateboard speed records all over the world. He's been over 100 miles an hour on a luge and I think over 90 on a skateboard. So just, you know, like most Bonneville guys, I love you, Roger, but you got a screw loose.
Is he just pointed straight down like some crazy hill somewhere?
Yeah.
Is that really
He's a neat guy. He's probably somebody you might want to have on the show. He's a really good storyteller, and he's kind of like the Smokey Eunuch of skateboarding, if you know what that reference means.
Meaning like how to build cheatery skateboards for
nobody
competition?
Nobody said cheat. Whoa, man. Whoa. When you read a rule book, really lines between the pages. You read between the lines. I mean, we've been doing this. We've got several copies of the Bonneville book, and it's everywhere in here. You know, it's like everybody's reading it, and we've been actually the staff at SCTA, the technical staff over there, has just been fantastic. You know, we want to make sure we're doing everything right. A first year build, you know, no surprise, electrics are not popular there. I think we're the only electric running this year. It's kind of an old school.
Get out of here,
crowd,
one?
Right?
One? There's only one?
I think so. That's signed up so far, you know, and it could change, but it's a great venue for it. It's much like, you know, Pikes Peak or any of the hill climb stuff. You know, for electric, you're only going to run 6 to 8 minutes.
Yeah.
Plenty of battery for that. And,
totally.
So.
What is the vehicle? Is it based on something or is it some crazy Lakester?
Yeah. So we originally bought a belly tanker, a fuel tank.
Oh God!
So cool.
Yeah. Oh my God! So, so you have a customer with a death wish. That's really where this started.
Well, it was our own death wish. I mean, we literally bought a fuel tank for the shop, and I mean, we're so dumb. You know, we're just like, oh yeah, let's put wheels, shoot an axle through this thing, and put a motor on it. And Roger put
once you know how to weld, when you start drinking tequila,
it's scary,
a whole different set of outcomes.
Yeah.
It's possible.
And you know, Roger puts the thing into CFD, you know, basically computer aero analysis, and the thing spins like a top. You know, we start talking, and then we're like, hey, you know, you guys know SoCal Speed Shop, they did the collaboration with Chevy a little while back where they did a more modern rendition of a belly tanker. And then we're like, well, let's do that. We're electric. And we kind of started going down that path. And again, we're running into severe problems with aero. And we're not so old school.
Turns
enough.
Out those things only like look kind of aerodynamic.
It turns out, I think the only reason people use them is because they were just cheap. You know, you could get them. I don't know what the version of Craigslist was after the war, but you could find them.
Yeah.
And so then we're like, okay, well, let's make a Lakester with a kind of belly tanker look. And we kept kind of going through this design process and then running
between
it.
Between a Lakester and a belly tanker, like what's a Lakester with a belly tanker look versus a Lakester that's not a belly tanker look?
Well, I guess technically in a weird way, a belly tanker is kind of a Lakester.
A belly tanker, for those who have no idea what we're talking about, is like a drop tank from an old airplane that held fuel. It kind of looks like a missile.
It is basically, torpedo shaped. And you look at some of these and you're surprised the driver can even fit in it with the engine and steering and linkage and all that stuff. So it's crazy, you know. But we kept refining the design process and got to this point where, you know, we had to pull the nose down to get some front end aero. We had to get a stabilizer in there and a few other things. And by the time we're done, it essentially looks like what they would call a streamliner, but we're technically a Lakester because our wheels sit outside of the body.
Okay, belly tanker is a specific thing, and a Lakester is like any streamliner where the wheels are outside, and they're fully unshrouded, right? Just open wheel.
Yeah, just open wheels. I mean, basically our front
and
end.
You're running those tires
like
that look like inner tubes, right?
Yeah.
Basically, like they look like you take them off and then go floating down the Colorado River in them with a cooler.
Yeah, and if a friend ever asked you to put one on a bead on a tire, just say no, just run away. I had to crank those things up. We took them to two different tire shops and they both denied us because they took them to 80 PSI and they wouldn't seat. And I put on the goggles, the, you know, ear protection and just went all the way up and they finally seated at like 125 PSI.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So
and you know, these are Goodyear land speed tires, but it's got this, you know, they're rated for 300 plus miles an hour, but it's got the sticker on it. Like don't overinflate 35 pounds when seating. You know, it's just like,
what?
It's the weirdest thing.
What if you do that thing where you spray the, you know, butane inside there?
God, we had everything in there. We had like five, we did everything. It was nuts. We had everybody in the shop out there. The secret or the trick that finally worked is just letting them sit in the sun all day, getting as soft and hot as we could possibly get them. And then lots of Simple Green. Simple Green, for whatever reason, works really well on tires. I don't know why, but there's something real slippery in that. And
the
that
idea, like, I think, like, once that you let them sit in the sun, it's like, oh, yeah, the desert tire works when they sit out in the desert for a little while.
You know, it's just, it's funny, right? Like, as car guys, you're like, oh, yeah, I know a lot about this. Ask me a Porsche question. Ask me this. But then you go to land speed, and you're just like, I am so out of my element. I don't know any of this, you know? Yeah. And we're calling guys, just asking the most rookie questions. Like, how do we put the tires on? And, you know,
the Endeavor requires so much precision. Like, you know, I'm looking at, you guys have some renderings up on your Instagram and you know, the previous electric car record is 340 miles an hour and the shape of your vehicle, like you're not going for 185, like you are going for that. So everything is like CFD and measured and precise.
Right.
And then you get to the tires and you're like, well, let's grab some of that Simple Green and a sponge and then get some pasta sauce and let's see if we can get these tires
this
on.
This isn't
like,
working. Put them in the sun. Yeah,
right,
no, it's nuts, you know. And you mentioned numbers. If we could dive into that real quick so I can clarify for the listeners. So the current, the fastest electric car speed recorded was 341, and that's the Buckeye Bullet by Ohio State. But their actual record, the recorded record's 314 because you got to run for a whole mile And so obviously they were either decelerating or accelerating through the mile because 314 was their average. And that's of two.
Well, don't you run both ways as well?
They don't run both ways anymore. Somebody's throttle stuck back in the day, and that kind of killed that. I guess he was coming in, as they say, coming in hot to the pits.
My God, imagine you coming in towards the pits at like 400. Like, yikes!
Apparently that happened. Maybe I don't know the details, but I was basically told. And it's funny, Matt, because I said the same thing. Like, okay, so we go and run the other way. I mean, I watched all the documentaries and everything, and they don't do that anymore. You run the same way. So like,
not only do we not do it anymore, we don't talk about it either.
Yeah, we don't talk about it.
Oh, that little guy.
You ask if you can go the other way, and they just shake their head and go, "Oh, you poor child."
Yeah. So, I just pulled up the pictures on your Instagram. You didn't mention is, I'm sorry, basically because I came back from my trip, Zach and I wanted to sort of quarantine for a couple days just in case. I've been traveling.
Right. Yeah.
And so we hate doing these three-way Zoom shows. They suck. Yeah. And we don't have visual assets.
We're more used to it nowadays.
Today.
Yeah.
I know, but normally we'd have visual assets to show. But all I'm trying to say is what you kind of glossed over is that the car is very pretty.
Oh, thank you.
It's a very good-looking car.
Thank you.
With,
you know, Roger Hickey of Hickey Speed designed it. I mean, we went back and forth, but he carried the weight on his shoulders on that one for sure. And it's tough. I don't know if you guys have ever done surface modeling in a CAD program. It's really easy to draw chassis tubes, and you know, paramodeling is pretty easy. But you get into surfaces and this aerodynamic, you know, subtleties and stuff like that, and it really becomes complex. But you know, real
very
quick,
good. So 314 is the number.
Yeah. So 314 is the number that Ohio State has because that was their average over the course of 2 miles on separate days. So when you are kind of in the running for a record, you have 1 hour to get your car into impound. And then while in impound, you have 4 hours to work on it, and they'll let you go for the backup run, as they call it, the next morning. And so that's our plan. But what we really are doing is we're going after an E2 class record. We didn't want to show up to Bonneville like our very first year and like, hey, where's the salt? And we're going to, you know, set the world record. I mean, it's so unrealistic. And we're very novice,
Bert Monroe,
right?
Bert Monroe of you.
Yeah, right. So Bert Monroe, you know. So we're basically, we built a Lakester and we kept it under 1,000 kilograms, 2,200 freedom units. And so what we're going to do with that is we want to hit what's called an E2 class record. That record right now is only 213 miles an hour.
What separates E2 from E1?
The E3 class would be unlimited.
Goes the other way?
Yeah, it goes the other way. And that would be 2,201 pounds and up, basically 1,001 kilogram and up. And you look at some of these things, like I'm not sure the final weight. I heard it was like 10,000 pounds on the Buckeye Bullet, the Venturi car. So, you know, you can get heavy real quick with a land speed car and electric and all that. So our plan is we've geared our motor to do 338 mile an hour at 16,000 RPM. Right. So that's our max wheel speed.
16,000 RPM. And you have a single speed.
Single speed. In fact, on our Instagram just yesterday, we posted a video with the new gear set, the reduction in the calibrated speedometer. And actually, guys are holding our 930 shafts in because they're not even clipped yet. And we ran it up to that speed, and it came out to be like 3,700 RPM at the flange. I mean, just crazy. And the wildest thing is, you know, you run it from zero basically up to 337, no gear shifts, no pauses in the motor. And because of the reduction, we're putting close to 2,000 foot-pounds out of the shaft. So, you know, that's about all the facts we know how fast we're going
to
run.
So you're like a one-to-one. You're a one-to-one like a Koenigsegg.
We're a 4.5 to 1 because we have that 16,000 RPM, right? So we reduce 16,000 by 4.5 and we end up with a flange, you know, basically a wheel speed of around 3,700 RPM max. We're running a 31 inch land speed wheel in the rear. And so that equates to about 337 mile an hour. Now we're going to have slip on the salt. There's a lot of factors. There's wind and all this. We're not going for the 314. We think it's completely unrealistic that we could do it in this car. But what we are doing is gathering a lot of data. We've got our partners, AEMEV, involved in this. And we're going to do some really just data gathering, look at what kind of wheel slip we're going to have, you know, look at
a lot.
Right.
It's going to be, let me just tell you, I'm talking about a Jetta. Okay.
Yeah.
It probably weighed 2,700 pounds. It's not even close to what you're talking about here. And yeah. I couldn't go flat until somewhere around 125 miles an hour in the top of like fourth gear.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Otherwise, it was just
Based on our RPM and torque, we figured we could spin wheels all the way up to 200 is what we calculated.
And, that's some David Donahue shit.
But you know, we're just kids at heart. Like, really, all the crew wants to know is like, can we do a donut?
Yeah.
Like, will they let us do a donut out there? Like,
I think that's you'd worry about doing a donut at 300 miles an hour is what you should really be worried about.
You might want a little wider track to do
that. But we did, you know, like any team, we've been having meetings and kind of assessing a game plan. And so we kind of have a plan. And, you know, you go out on the short course and you license up and, you know, get the 150, 175, move to the long course. And then we have some numbers that we're specifically going after to get the record. And then when we're done with that, you know, we've basically given our driver, Roger, the green light to just like light it up, dude. Let's see what this thing has. See if we can hurt it. What can we do? You know, because that's really what we're, you know, going for, right?
I mean, it's amazing. You know, with a typical Bonneville car, you know, gasoline powered, what you see a lot is you have to do the push start with the trucks, right? Because the gearing is so crazy that the things can't even like, you know, idle hardly. I'm guessing you won't have this problem at all. You'll be able to just cruise around, you know,
idle. We'll have enough starting torque at the wheel. If we had Velcro tires, we could drive the thing up a wall.
That would be kind of sick.
Our torque exceeds the weight of the car.
That's hilarious. Yeah. I'm all for a visual demo, by the way. Maybe you should consider driving it up a wall. I think.
Well, we've been talking. It's funny. We've been talking to another Southern California automotive outlet about doing some drag racing in it. And literally, I think all we have to do is change the rear tires.
If you tried to do is it so much power that if you had a sticky rear tire and you tried to do drag launches that you think you would probably break it, or do you think it would hold up to that type of abuse?
I think it would probably hold up. I don't think we have enough weight in the car.
Mm.
Right. You know, how much torque you have, is kind of insignificant, without traction and some weight over the rear axle. Yeah. So
where is where's the motor? Oh, basically attached right to the rear axle pretty much.
Yeah. Technically you would call it a rear engined vehicle because the differential in the reduction sits in front of the motor. Right. And so if you look, look at the surprised look. He's like,
The whole shit is the whole motor's behind the driver? Everything's back there?
Yeah. So if you look at that picture with the two big cans back there, one half is the motor and the other half is the inverter. And then the reduction box and differential sit in the middle.
That's rear engined. Okay. Right. And then where are the batteries? Just the floor?
So there's a big empty box in front of that. We're putting in an experimental battery pack that we picked up. It's about 37 kilowatt hour, about 600 pounds. And that goes right in the middle. And we actually kind of need a little bit of the weight. We could have done a lighter battery, but we just wanted to kind of get some weight around the rear wheels.
You're at your max weight, I imagine, right?
No, we had it on the Long Acres earlier, and I think we're estimating about 1,700. So we'll probably come in about 300 under. You know, Roger's probably about 200, 190 or something like that. So we'll be right there, race weight, you know, 19 or something.
So is this thing, you think, the way that you would set up a car like this to basically drain the whole battery pack in like a 4 or 5 mile run and just flow as much juice as you possibly can? Or how many runs do you think you can get out of a charge?
Well, so first of all, when you're draining the pack, your actual voltage goes down, right? And there's a direct linear relationship between the voltage and horsepower. So you don't want to run it all the way down because then you would be, you know, literally losing horsepower as you go down the run. So we're trying to stay in that top 50% of the pack, right? So we took, according to our calculations, a wide open run would be somewhere between 16 and 20 kilowatt hours of energy. And which in a street car would get you like 75 miles for reference, right?
Turns out going fast takes a lot of energy.
The range kind of sucks in a land speed car.
But it would be pretty gangster if, as another visual demo, you drove it like 100 miles on the street. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, we probably could if we could make it over a speed bump. The thing's like inch off the ground or something. It's funny because I was driving home late night and kind of delirious working so late. And I was like, I wonder if we could take this on the street. And I realized we can't even get out of the parking lot. There's no way. How much steering angle would it have?
Does it have any steering angle at all?
So it's really you're charging it up basically every run, right? Or you might get two.
Yeah, and I'll come back to steering angles, Zach, because I want to talk about that a little bit. But the charging's fascinating because we're doing kind of a world first, whatever you want to call it. And again, we're crazy. We are going to solar charge. We figured Bonneville. Yeah, I mean, look it, man. It's beautiful out there, right? I've been on Instagram, and I just kind of follow the hashtag Bonneville Salt Flats. And it's a neat hashtag, by the way, because half of it is just badass automotive stuff. And then the other half is, a bunch of girls going out there and just posing with
That's
this.
That's hilarious.
But in all honesty,
influencers in the wild.
It's a wonderful piece of nature, right? It's absolutely gorgeous out there. Tons of photographs. I mean, we all look at, sales slick photographs of cars and stuff like that. And the Southern California equivalent is El Mirage.
Yes. My favorite place to get video. I love it.
Right. So we kind of have a responsibility to protect these areas, right? And we're like, oh yeah, we're this cool electric car company. And then we show up and we just start firing up the Onan generators or whatever. It just doesn't make sense. So a good friend of mine, actually a friend that goes all the way back to like when we were 5 years old, has started a company called Tier 4 Solar, and he makes solar tracking systems that actually use servos to angle the panels so that they're always the most efficient angle to the sun.
That's awesome.
And we're bringing that trailer out, and we're actually going to generate our own electricity right there on the salt.
That's so kick-ass.
For all of our runs. Yeah, so we're basically the sustainable team. It'd be like, VP showing up with their car, and then in the truck, they got like a little petroleum distillery or something in the back,
No,
we'll actually be creating the fuel at Bonneville.
It's amazing. But you said there's 4 hours right in between runs. So can you charge up enough juice in 4 hours with that rig to be back where you need to be for run two?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we have is we have actually three battery packs. So we're taking almost 120 kilowatt hour of energy for the car. And the trailer has 48 kilowatt hour, plus some reserve. So the trailer's got about 50 kilowatt hour. So, if you take 16 kilowatt hour into 50 right off the bat without, if it was completely cloudy, we'd still get three runs off the trailer before we needed solar. But it's going to be sunny. It always is. Right. Project the weather. So the whole time while, we're depleting the batteries, charging the solar system's charging those batteries up, and we've got them in rotation. So we've got a pretty good plan for this. We've done, other events that have required, creative charging and things like that. So, it definitely took some planning, and we wanted to do something unique, and now you're going to go to Bonneville. There's going to be, all this stuff everywhere. And then we're going to be the nerds in the corner with the solar panels and the electric car.
They make movies about the fucking nerds, dude. They make movies about the nerds. Bert DeBro was a nerd, but I hear from Gail Banks. Gail Banks told us that on the Bonneville Salt Flats, Bert Monroe fucked everybody. Oh, Bert Monroe was a hound and had a lot of sex on the Bonneville Salt Flats, and that's what they left out of the movie, according to Gail Banks, who was there in person to see
that,
it.
That makes so much sense. The guy had so much swagger. He gets out of everything. Part, riding his car on the highway and all that stuff. If the stories are true,
I bet, have you ever met a Kiwi dude? They're completely out of their minds. Any random Kiwi with a little race car, it could be Bert Monroe. I mean, Zach and I went to New Zealand. We met these guys. They're all him. They could all be him on any given day. So you glossed over it. But just to jump back, you didn't use the word specifically. Interchangeable battery packs.
Yeah, you're right. I just said we're bringing through batteries. We have interchangeable battery packs. We actually built our own special gantry system, an electric gantry. So we pull the car under the gantry, lift the battery out. Right. And
does that, does that also run on the solar kit?
Come on.
Of course.
And, but it's okay. We bought
Electric jacks for the car. I wanted to call them air jacks, but they would have to be electric.
You know, jacks, right? In today's staff meeting, we were talking about jacking. We've been talking about it for a little while, and it's been really tough because again, the car sits like literally a half inch off the salt. And, we devised this, we figured out that, you know, the worst case scenario would be flatting like 6 miles out, right? And the plan is we put the gantry in the truck, drive the truck out there, take the gantry out, and actually lift the car to change a tire.
Yeah.
But it's, we can't get a floor jack under it, you know, and we've got this, you know, beautiful carbon fiber body that we built. And, you know, I'm not going to wedge anything under that.
Buy,
right?
Maybe so. Buy like a used like jack from like an F1 team. Like is Haas selling anything? You know, one of those nose cone guys.
Come on, dude. That? Don't beat up on the only Americans in front of me.
I'm just sorry. It was literally, it was the first one who came to mind. I don't even know what the results were. The first.
Yeah, come on. It's 2020. Everybody's beating up on Racing Point this year. They got a funny name and a funny car. And
yeah.
I just read this morning, Sergio Perez has COVID now. And
oh, no.
Yeah, no. I was just making the point the other day about, you know, baseball and all these guys getting COVID and Formula One. So good. Nobody's got it. There's been no reports. And
somebody was eventually going to go to the club.
Yeah. Right. We know we got it at the club. Right?
Somebody couldn't stay away from the club.
Zach about the steering angle. We're running a strange spindle up front. It's real popular in the drag, you know, community.
Is that a brand? Strange is a brand.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
It's one of those brand names where you go, wait a minute.
No, we've been fighting. Oh, man, Matt, I tell you, buddy, we've been fighting this thing because we're all off-road and street course guys, right? So we build stuff to just take hits, you know. And our chief fabricator, Johnny Garcia, J5, he's full off-road. He's built some of the gnarliest off-road things out there and just a masterful TIG welder. You can see some of the work on the Instagram page there. But, you know, I forgot again where I was going with this, man. I'm pretty scattered. I apologize.
Steering racks. Steering racks.
So he's trying to build these things and he's looking at these little dinky drag racing spindles. And I mean, they're cute. They look like scaled up from an RC car. You know, he's like, there's no way in hell we're going to put these spindles on the car. And, you know, then you look and you see them on these guys doing 300 miles an hour and, you know,
like off a funny car and a top fuel dragster, right? Yeah. So yeah. The angle is basically fucking none.
I mean, the wheel will go, you know, 180 degrees practically. It's just nuts. So everything's limited by the rack and all that. But we could do some oppo lock, do some drifting, I think.
Oh, really? You can?
You're nuts.
Yeah. I think so. We're not building the car for that.
Obviously.
But well, again, how wide is the rear? Visual demonstration. The rear track?
In the center of the tires is about 48 inches. So it's about 4 feet center.
Pretty narrow. Yeah.
Pretty narrow.
But I guess that one of the good things is you can just put longer axles on it. Boom. It's got the wheels around side of the body. Requires no other mods.
Well, we have, we did a rear suspension called a Dedion axle.
Oh, Dedion. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, nice. Which is, you know, not too common nowadays. I think
Are they in?
Smart car has one.
Yeah. Something else does too.
I think the Ford Ranger EV that they produced from like 01 to 03 or something like that, it had a Dedion.
Why do I want to say, Zach, did the Morgan Plus 4 that I was driving have that?
Probably. Something that sounds like a type of car that would have a Dedion.
British shit, right?
Yeah, where they basically mount the third member to the chassis, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not unsprung weight. And then you've got half shafts. Independent half shafts. And so because normally we mount the motor with an IRS, we basically took a kind of an IRS type suspension and linked it together to create a Dedion. You know, we don't have much travel. We got six of the technicians jumped in the car last night. And so we were overweight by like 400 pounds and they were literally jumping. And I think we got it to flex like a half inch, you know? Yeah.
Nice.
So
is there like, there's no like real downforce, right? You just have sort of stability, but is it actually making
just,
any sort of downforce?
In the computer modeling, we have downforce in the nose.
Uh-huh.
And that's
it.
That's probably
a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. And then weight for the rear. And then of course, we got a vertical stabilizer.
Oh, yeah, you probably want that too. Yeah.
Airplane parts.
And does it have any brakes or pure shoot?
So Jamar Performance worked with us on the brakes, and I like to tell people if we're going to go 300 miles an hour, we need some of the best brakes. And these guys, if you do off-road, you know Jamar Performance real well. Mm-hmm. And so they worked with us on this and did the brake system for us, the master cylinder and the rear brakes and all that. We will have a little bit of regenerative braking, and then we're also running two full parachutes as well.
Mm. And but are the brakes themselves like traditional disc brakes? Just
yeah, quad piston. It's their normal. They sell a really neat kit for a rear brake setup that has a has the 930 Porsche flange on it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah, so we're running that setup, and then our master cylinder is just a thing of beauty, 100% billet. You know, the reservoir awesome. And the cylinder all billet. It's pretty neat.
Start to finish. What does it cost to? Sorry, Zach. Go ahead.
How much of your setup will change depending on the surface of the salt? Because I heard like a year or two ago, it was super, super hard. So yeah. It's very hard for cars to go full throttle. Matt's probably like part of why you had so much wheel spin is if the salt is like ice, you can't really dig in.
That would be an awesome question to ask somebody who's been.
Well, I mean, on your team has been before, I hope.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, Roger, Roger, he pulls out pictures of him. You know, he was in the womb at Bonneville and 1, 2, 3. I mean, he's got all these childhood photos. His father passed away a couple years back, and they actually cremated him and put the ashes in a chute and then did a run. Pulled the chute and spread his ashes wow. there. So
talk
we're
about your visual demonstration. Right. There you go.
Oh man. And that's so gnarly. We're a really good company.
Fucking gnarly. Put me in a chute, bro, and pull me at 300. That's some 100 times.
That's salt fever, right? I mean, yeah. You talk to these Bonneville guys and they just chase it and chase it and chase it. I mean, even, yeah. You know, the Burt Monroe story, he went back like 6 or 7 more times and some mm-hmm. movie didn't cover that. And you know, it takes a lot of work, a lot of effort and all that to do. So,
dude, when I was out there, I met a guy who was helping Volkswagen, you know, with their, he was like the safety and tech guy. And he's, you know, he's a salt guy, you know, he lives in Wendover. Right. Yeah. And he showed me this picture. He did like 380 miles an hour in a Thunderbird in 1987. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Cars were still like taking off in the front end and stuff.
Yeah. And this dude, I mean, he looked like, you know, he looked like you would cast him in a movie as Salt Man number 4. You know, he was great. He was had all kind of advice. Like I got his name. So you guys can hire this dude.
Yeah. Well, so to touch on that, this year is supposedly the best salt that they've had in a couple of decades. The lake dried out early on. I think it's been dry for about a month now. They've got a live camera there. We were watching the guys grading the salt a couple weeks ago, and it's far enough out or close enough now that we can start looking at the weather forecast. The weather looks pretty good. So, you know, we got our fingers crossed. We're knocking on wood. But so far this year is shaping up to be one of the best years. And on top of that, it's interesting that it's going on. You can go there as a spectator. They've got all their permits. It's easy to socially distance and be aware of all the safety protocols and stuff at an outdoor venue like that. And so it's kind of neat because
that's a great point. If you're going to go spectate a motorsport right now, there's no better time.
Even the F1, they were going to try and do something in Italy, and they already backed out of that. I mean, there's probably no going to be spectator motorsports for the remainder of the year. So this is, you know, kind of one of the last chances to get out there and actually spectate, you know, be right up next to the, you know, especially the gas guys. I mean, I get it. I'm going there to see them, you know. Aren't electric cars kind of boring? We're going for a record and we're going for technology and data and like literally all these boring.
All of it's,
I mean, it's
cool,
fun,
dude.
But
it's cool, dude. Anyone going real
It's not as cool as like cool. Some of these cars like Speed Demon and stuff like that. They're just...
Bro, awesome. We got to work on your positivity here. Your shit is
No. We're walking amongst giants, right? Yeah. We really are. We're walking amongst these guys that have been doing this for decades, and they're generational Bonneville guys, right? And we know our place. We're coming into this. Hopefully, we'll have a good time and drink some whiskey and tequila with these guys and swap stories. And next year they'll hopefully welcome us. You know. I don't think I finished that up earlier, but basically our plan is to go get the class record this year And we're working with a couple larger companies to go back next year and actually get the overall land speed record. And I think more people are going to be involved in this. I've heard some rumors of some other guys kind of going after similar stuff. And it will make it exciting again. You know, the lesser known fact about land speed is the first 6 land speed records ever set were electric cars. Right.
Oh, so I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Back at El Mirage back in the day?
No, land speed started in Europe.
Did it really?
Yeah, it did, unfortunately. Yeah.
Well, you know, when you grow up in Southern California,
I know.
They don't tell you that.
No.
I'm sorry, not grow up, but when you live,
it was perfected
in Southern California. They don't
in Southern California.
Yeah,
it was invented in Europe, and
perfected
it. Where
in Europe did they do land speed
I think,
racing?
Most of the original ones were coming out of France. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they had a lot more going on in Europe
they had a lot
years
going
ago
on.
Than we did.
Yeah.
You know, we were like horses and guns. And
we're
land speed racing.
Yeah. Look up like the Baker Bullet or the Baker Bomber.
History, Bonneville, Mormon women's record. We're Blackpool back in the day.
Yeah, they were all, I mean, basically all of these early electric land speed cars, I mean, talk about torpedo
shape.
Where
is the Alvord? Oh, that's in Oregon. That's Oregon.
Yeah.
The Baker Electric ran 23 miles an hour.
Right. And so they were slowly going up. And then,
so you need a huge, vast swath of land to do that.
God, you probably needed a lead battery factory or something. But, you know, they eventually got up over 60 miles an hour, 70, and I think that range before gas really got in the mix. I think somewhere just short of 100 miles an hour is when gas superseded electric in speeds. And then, of course, it's been gas ever since. And, you know, we're kind of the notion – it's fun to try these things, kind of like Pike's Peak. You know, we saw what Sebastian Loeb did. I mean, that guy's a robot, and nobody—I mean, who's going to touch an eight-minute time at Pike's Peak, right? It's just
say that. Meanwhile,
and then, well, but then all of a sudden, you know, I mean, I was when Sebastian did his run, I was like, oh man, it's going to be forever before this record is topped. I mean, there's, in fact, I think he came in maybe low nines, 9:15 or something. And then a couple of years later, VW shows up and just
someone always shows up.
But they posted a time that I think even the most optimistic people were just knocked off their feet by. I mean, that time, what they did, like an 8:13 or something like that.
I don't remember the time. All I remember really about the Volkswagen IDR is that I saw the onboard Nürburgring video, and it is one of the craziest things
crazy.
I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like a normal human could drive a car that fast.
Yeah, right. They ran an 8:57 at Pike's Peak in
8:57.
You know, 2018. So they broke the 9-minute barrier.
They broke the 9-minute
crazy
barrier, and I mean, it seems like just yesterday when Monster Tajima broke the 10-minute barrier.
Right.
That literally
that
seems
thing was
like
cool.
Yesterday.
That Monster Tajima, whatever
yeah,
that
the
car
Suzuki.
Was. Yeah, that Suzuki
16,
thing.
Yeah,
it was pretty cool. That thing. Yeah.
Let
me turn left for a second. Tell me about electric converted vintage cars with manual transmissions.
It's a feeling. It's a soulful thing. They're not the most efficient way to convert a car.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of cars that if you wanted to keep the integrity in the car and keep the value in the car, that's the best way to go. You know, it's essentially
you keep saying that possibility that your non-invasiveness, the possibility to return to whatever. Does anyone call you and say, hey, Michael, I want to go back?
Never. I mean, come on. Never. No. And
so
I mean,
it's
we've
like
got
reversibility
customers.
Is a fun pitch, but like
yeah.
It just never, ever happens, right?
No, and some of our original customers now, you know, we talked to them and they've got 80, 90,000 miles on their cars. We got one customer with a 914 that's got 110,000 miles on his car.
Really?
Yeah. So people drive these. I mean, they're
what's
definite.
What's the maintenance cost of 110,000 miles in an electric
car? Like $390 a month or something like that?
Like just nothing? You just don't have to do anything?
Nothing. I think this gentleman had one DC converter go out. It's about a $200 part.
Nice.
If memory serves me right. Yeah. And then I had another customer that's up around 70,000 miles, car we did about 8 years ago, an MR2, and never had an issue ever. They took it to a body shop for a little tiny fender bender they got in, and somehow the body guys like welding on the car caused a little bit of a problem in one of the chargers or something. It's like a $500 part. And so it's generally speaking, right? Little to no maintenance cost at all. Now it's a car, So you got wheel bearings, you got brakes, you got, I mean, there's all kinds of other maintenance. And if it's a vintage car, then, you know, every single bolt on there is just trying to back its way out. So there's always something to work on the vintage cars. Like my, you know, I daily drive a 65 double cab pickup truck, and, you know, my rear axle seals leak like every 4 weeks, you know, I mean, it's just, you're just constantly doing stuff to it. It makes so many god awful noises. Well, the electric side of it just goes, you know,
the powertrain works is good.
Powertrain works.
The bummer about electric, converted old cars is that now you have, you hear even more fucking squeaks and rattles you got to deal with.
Yeah.
You know, the lopy cammy flat four engine. It's like, is that the engine rattling? Is that my cam or my floor pan? I'm not really sure.
Yeah. But you know, I mean, overall it's a blast. You know, we did a video last year with Jay Leno and he took one of our cars that we did out and flogged it around the, you know, the back streets. I mean, shit, you drove them when you were down here. Super fun roads. And he was just having a blast, shifting through the gears, downshifting, coming into turns, actively driving the car. And I think
don't need to rev match in the manual.
Yeah, same question.
You can. Yeah, you can. But you can also just downshift, stuff it in, and rev the thing to like 10,000 RPM. It doesn't care.
Does it engine brake?
Yeah, variable engine braking too. And you like can even put, yeah,
a knob?
You could. Yeah, absolutely.
That's cool.
Our preference is mapping. So we'll set up a couple different maps. So we'll have like a hill map, you know, a flat. Yeah. And it's easier that way. So like if you're on the freeway, you know, you got an itch on your foot, you can lift and the car doesn't like start braking real hard.
Right, you know?
But then you go into the hills with a 1965, you know, drum brake pickup truck. And you can go down the steepest hills, turn up your regen, and literally not use your brakes. Just one pedal drive all the way down the hill. And when you are decelerating, you're actually capturing that energy and charging the battery.
What is the interface for that? Is it a little screen with the menus or is it a knob or what?
Most often a laptop running specialized software, serial interface type of software. Yeah.
You have to have that while you're driving?
No. We set up, like in my truck, I switch maps with, I wanted a vintage era appropriate switch. So I bought an extra windshield wiper switch and mounted underneath, and it literally looks factory. But if I need to change my regen setting, I pull a vintage switch.
That's what I meant. That's cool. Yeah. I literally meant the dumbest version of that question, which is, you position it,
you got the bus steering wheel kind of out there like this and you position it. So it's just underneath and it's real easy to hit. You don't even have to look at it or anything. And, yeah, it's just...
That's excellent.
Yeah.
Is the engine's, or yeah, motor speed, like for rev matching, is that fixed with every motor you use or can you program that too? So can you make it feel like, you know, a slow revving big block versus a light flywheel, high revving, you know,
V8? Yeah, you can. That's actually a setting called the slew rate or the acceleration rate. So you can take your max power, let's say it's, you know, a Tesla motor, 400 kilowatt, you can tell it how much time you want to take before it's giving 400 kilowatt, right?
Yeah.
If anybody's driven a modern golf cart, they're kind of like that. You can jump in them and just stomp on the gas pedal with your gin and tonic, and you're not even going to spill a drop. It just does a nice, smooth pull away. And it's basically like a volume knob. You know, you can turn it all the way down, so you essentially have no slew rate, and you're going to start breaking parts. And
my electric bike is like that. I've got a really fast vintage electric bike that goes like 35 miles an hour. It's a monster, but it won't do like a burnout. It takes off kind of slow from a stop.
Yeah. And they probably did that because, you know, that instant torque, especially the low RPM stuff is so powerful. It would probably snap a chain. You know,
it doesn't have a chain. The motor's in a hub, but it maybe will snap the spoke on the motor. Spokes.
Spoke
on the wheel. Yeah. I'm sure they have their reasons. Yeah.
I mean,
could simulate if you got to look at a dyno curve from another sports car, you could simulate that kind of a power band delivery, right?
Yeah, and I think it's more seat of your pants. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, we all drive every day, so we know what a car should feel like. You could go get in a 2020 car and feel like something's off. You know, I've driven F-150s my whole life. And when I got my new one in 04, I'm like, why is the blinker switch in the wrong spot? You know, just subtle things, right? Yeah. You just know how a car should feel. And so when you get an electric car, what your input gives the car, you should anticipate the reaction. And if the reaction's different than what you anticipate, you've got some programming work to do, right? Because that's really what we're going after. It's just a seat of the pants kind of feel thing instead of getting technical with the dyno chart and all that. And then we go off of the customer, you know, it feels twitchy. Okay, we'll turn it down a little bit, you know, or it feels a little sluggish. And they're not talking about power. They're literally talking about that reaction time, the slew rate or the acceleration rate. Mm.
What are some of the most, you know, interesting requests that you've gotten for, you know, for one-off builds, and maybe ones that you've actually done and maybe ones that you couldn't do for one reason or another? What are people asking for?
Oh, man. You know, half of those are covered by NDAs.
Oh, really?
It's like the really, the really neat, fun stuff. You know, we just can't disclose customer projects. But, you know, in our realm, like just speaking generally, there's a huge interest in aviation. We don't do any aviation. We turn them all away. But we've seen recently just a huge uptick in marine and aviation and just a whole sort of other applications. We're finally getting a good call volume out of the South of dudes doing, you know, sprint car races, dirt track, stuff like that.
Actually kind of cool. I like that idea. Yeah,
we're starting to see more of that. We worked with a couple guys that have some race series, and they're trying to bring in, you know, experimental cars, you know, basically.
Anyone going for Formula Drift yet? I feel like a Formula Drift electric car.
Well, we worked with
someone tried last year.
Yeah. Napoleon Motorsports built a Camaro last year. We provided.
Oh, yeah.
And
they got, moves too fast.
Yeah, they got kind of poo-pooed on. Like, they came to Long Beach, and the Long Beach Fire Department's like, we don't know how to handle electric vehicle fire.
Oh, yeah.
And without even realizing, they've got like 100,000 Teslas in their county, you know. Oh, we don't know how to handle a vehicle fire in traffic. There's like two cars on the Formula D. So it was just really weird, and they – I've never in my life heard a story like this, but they didn't let them run it. And you know, so they've run it a few times, and they had some issues. You know, the thing now is just real high speed entry speed. And with the gear set that comes with the Tesla, it's on a 20-inch diameter tire. You put it on something more in the line of Formula D, and you're kind of topping out around 130 miles an hour, and it's starting to fall off the torque, maybe even a little lower, maybe like, you know, 100 mile an hour. And that's not the direction those guys are going. Those guys are going for higher and higher entry speeds, and they were having a little bit of an issue programming the slew rate. You know, it's important to note the state of the Tesla hackery right now. We're still using a lot of the logic components from the Tesla drive system. So there are some limitations on what we can do with the motor as far as spin direction and traction control and things like that. But there's a real neat project underway that's going to become public soon that's going to add a lot of functionality, a lot of the stuff that you would expect out of the type of controls that you would expect out of a professional package. So we're really excited. And working with some companies for some more gear options and stuff like that. You know, the horsepower is there. Again, it's back to just making that expectation just like their other car, right? You want to get a driver in it. And we've gotten this feedback. We've had guys from the Formula D circuit in our cars to give us valuable feedback. And in general, they have a tough time controlling it. Once it breaks loose, you're not constrained to a gear, so it's really easy. Once you break loose, you have 130 mile an hour wheel speed all of a sudden, and
that's true.
And you don't
have
the
same kind of issue with driving an EV on a road course, which is that
once it breaks loose, that tire just goes right.
And it's hard to judge your entry speed because you don't know. You don't have the okay. Well, it's going to be the top of third gear. You know, I'm going to come down the straight in fifth, and I'm going to go fourth, third turn. You know, you don't have that. Now you got to look at your speedometer and kind of guess. Those cars are great on the corner exit, but they're tough to judge on the entry.
Yeah, and you don't have that, you know, some of those guys will, you know, drive it off the limiter in a gear, you know, things like that. And you just, you don't have that. And
You'd have to simulate maybe gear or actually run it with a manual gearbox. And now you're talking about a big pain.
And we've talked about this at Bonneville. It's a real issue because if we get wheel slip and the tire runs up, we're going to have 340 mile an hour wheel speed. That could be an issue.
Right. Yeah. You know, if you hit a little bump, I mean, that's. Like, I drove your E36 on drive, whatever, 2 years
ago. Yeah, and by the way, I got to say, I was looking at the footage from that day. You know, for the listeners out there, Zach set us up with NBC Sports, and we went out to Chuckwalla Raceway. But you, before we even started filming, you were doing some mental drifting just around the parking lot, right? Just like yeah, coming by the cars and all that stuff. And I have some of it on my cell phone, but I was just kind of getting some footage the other day. And I was like, oh man, I forgot we filmed this other stuff. Aside from you actually being on the racetrack, doing some drifting out there.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wanted to get up, because I went into that being concerned about exactly what we were talking about, that 0 to 130 mph wheel speed with one pedal. And so I wanted to feel it out a little bit in the parking lot. And you guys have done such a good job with, I think, Chelsea DeNofa's people of setting that car up, like dynamically, the chassis and everything just was really intuitive. And,
thanks.
You know, I found like, I know I looped it a few times, but it wasn't as on the edge as I was expecting. But I can imagine when the FD guys are full opposite lock, full throttle, 100 mph entry speed, if your foot wiggles, you know, the wrong amount, if you hit a bump, like the number of G-forces happening, you can kind of change your trajectory accidentally really quickly.
That's interesting. It's not as forgiving as a combustion engine on the throttle, right? There's definitely a latency in a combustion engine that, you know, kind of gets smooths out the bumps and stuff.
Especially like a forced induction, a turbo motor, because you're kind of squeezing instead of stabbing, you know?
Right.
You have a little extra time to work with and a little extra slop in your foot, you know, to work with for sure. Yeah.
When we were out there with Zach, we had heat issues. We were at Chuckwalla. I think
it's death hot out there.
I think literally on the dash of the car, it said like 132, just some crazy number. Well, if you've ever been to Chuckwalla, it's essentially like asphalt, you know, parking lot in the middle of the desert.
And, it's basically Saudi Arabia in America.
Yeah. And, you know, we work all in centigrade, and our battery cutoff is around 50 C, which I think is, I don't know, 135, 140. So we had just like 5 degrees of delta to cool, you know?
Yeah.
And we were having heat issues, and it was kind of neat because we'd never had the car in that hot of an environment before. I mean, we live down here by the beach in Southern California, so it's, you know, it's been pampered. And now we're going to Bonneville, and so we've been kind of chasing the same thing, these heat demons, you know? Heat is like pretty much our only enemy. It's all about just getting heat out of the batteries, heat out of the motor and stuff like that. And we were out there with Zach, that was an issue. And this is why we do this. You know, we try to be very open with our information and our technology. We try and share our data because, you know, we weren't embarrassed by the fact that we took a car out and we had some heat issues. To us, that's a learning moment, you know, and we take that data and we take the engineering that we gather out of it and improve on it in the next iteration, so that we can offer the best systems, not only, you know, to our customers, but build them for ourselves when we're doing other challenges like Bonneville and stuff like that. So those some lessons that we learned from the last event with Zach, we carry those into the next event going to Bonneville, and we'll carry those lessons forward as well.
Does the Bonneville car have a liquid cooling system, or does it have like fins on the packs for air cooling? How does that work?
Where do you put a radiator on a streamliner? Right. And you know, early on, we're talking about NACA ducts. Then we talk to these other guys, and they're like, you realize the salt's like talcum powder. It just goes everywhere. So now we're like, fuck, we want to seal our body, you know, seal as much as we can. And with that, the cooling decision was we just basically put a 5-gallon barrel in there. We're going to fill it with ice water, and hopefully that lasts 6 minutes.
Wow.
Yes.
There's so many things on
I
this
knew
car.
There was a little
so
bit of ghetto in there.
Yeah, right. Right.
It was mild. It's somewhere we were going to find out what you did that was super
there's
ghetto.
So much stuff hyper engineered. And then there's certain things like this. I'm not even going to fake it, man. We literally got one of those dune buggy, you know, spun aluminum cans.
Yeah.
And threw it in there with a couple dash fittings. And we're running the stock Tesla water pump that comes out of a Model S.
So is it just going to pump it over the batteries and then out of the car onto the ground?
No, that's actually for the drive unit and the inverter. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. What we did with the battery, since the run's so short and there's so much actually mass, right? You're think about trying to cool a 600-pound block of aluminum, mm-hmm. right?
Take a lot of cooling energy.
Conversely, it takes the same amount of energy to heat it up.
So in that short of a run, you're not going to have battery heat issues, what you're saying.
We'll definitely be building heat, but it's not prolonged. We're not going to be on a road course. We're not a Chuck Walla doing lap after lap. So what's going to happen, we've got internal temperature sensors on the battery. You can read the internal temperatures. So it's going to, again, this is a data gathering thing. So we don't know quite where we're going to come back, but if the battery pack's too warm, we have two standby packs that'll be on chillers, right? So that we'll have a chilled mass, you know, put that in the car, that will be our swap system. You know, so the swapping's not just for energy, but it's also for the temperature of the battery pack.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is, you've got a lot of angles here. I mean, you certainly have not left. I mean, and I don't know.
It's crazy. Like, how long ago did we do the video, the first video? I mean, that had to be 7 years ago.
2011 or 12.
God,
yeah. Long time ago.
A long time ago. So we've been doing this for a long time because we had built quite a few cars before the BMW. And our whole staff here, I mean, this isn't me. I mean, I've got a dozen guys back there that are just some of the most incredible engineers and fabricators and technicians, real open-minded, real problem-solving kind of guys. And I mean, this is completely a team effort. There's no question about it. I would never, ever even come close to pulling anything like this off, even with hired help, even if I went out and tried to hire everybody. I mean, we've over the last decade assembled a team here of guys that really embody the spirit of experimenting. I mean, we're essentially experimenting, and we're okay with saying that, you know, on these electric vehicles. And you got to be real creative. Let's try this. Let's try that. That didn't work. Let's modify that. And that's basically what we've been doing for the last 12 years or so.
Have you found a Taycan to pull apart yet?
I've been looking. You know, I've been looking.
Yeah.
No one's crashed one yet?
I mean, so think about this, Mr. Porsche Safari guy. If you came down here, right, and wanted to do an electric, would you want a Tesla motor in your Porsche? Or would you want
available, I would want a Taycan.
Right, right. Yeah, so you can see the allure to us.
Well, and I've spent, I don't want to say, I'm not an expert in Teslas, but I've spent a week, you know, in every car that they sell up until I haven't done a Y yet, but an SX and a 3. Yeah. And I've spent significant time in Taycans, and I prefer the Taycans. Hammer the shit out of a Taycan mercilessly.
Yeah.
And it will give you full power until almost, you know, until you're down to maybe 20%, 10% of battery.
Yeah. I mean, that's Porsche's calling card, right? Yeah. Even their GT3 launch control and all that. I mean, they literally want you to abuse their stuff. And I absolutely love them for that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just awesome. I am a little surprised you're, you know, a tall dude, if nobody knows. And it's a little tight. I felt a little constrained.
Yeah, I suppose. I didn't find it tight enough that it was really a problem for me.
Yeah.
It's as comfortable really as a 911. I'm shameless. I love driving them. I mean, it's not a perfect vehicle. It's very expensive. And if you, the one that I drove, if you looked at it, just to look at it, it didn't look like $135,000, you know, but because it had a fairly basic setup. But me and my wife drove without even thinking about it 300 miles on one charge, no problem. And then on the other side of it, I've hammered the shit out of them, and they are stupid fast. Even the 4S is stupid fast.
Yeah.
And they're just
now you were an early adopter. You had, back in the day, you were one of the first guys I know that had a Chevy Volt.
I bought a Volt in 2013, and it was one of the best cars I've ever had. And I gave it to my sister when I found myself with too many cars. I gave it to my sister when she moved to L.A., and then the lease was up on it. She returned it in and got the second-gen Volt, which was a fabulous car. Fabulous car.
Yep, we did the same. We went through Gen 1, loved it so much. And they wanted it back, and they wouldn't let us buy it at the end of the lease, so we just leased another one, the new version.
Yeah, it was a great, great car. I didn't think the Volt really ever got its enough commercial success for how good
of a car.
But
that's neat. I thought I'd mention it because you got a, you know, the smoking tire crowd, you know, highly combustion.
I don't think that's necessarily true. I think our Taycan videos and our Tesla videos do very well on the show. Right. I think people are about it. I don't think, I mean, We definitely have traditional sports car fans, but the electric stuff does well on our.
I guess the point I was trying to make is you were into it before it was cool to be into it.
I mean, you're giving me too much credit. I'm into anything that goes really fast. the Volt, admittedly, yes. I like the Volt, and not a lot of people thought the Volt was very cool, and I will die on that hill.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, well, I think it provided a really great ride and an experience that none of us until that point had ever had in a car. It was like, none of us had ever driven an electric car at that point, and we all get in the thing, and it's like, it's really quiet. We noticed like the lack of vibration and it's a much quieter experience, and you're much more calm when you get somewhere. And it was just really like, I'm glad that you bought that car and we all got to try it, 'cause it was a pretty eye-opening experience that we had. And it definitely changed my idea and expectations for electric cars from that point on. And some people look at like you talk about the high performance side of it. Someone's always going to go, well, I can fill the gas tank faster than I can charge it. Or, yeah, you can't, you can only run full throttle for 4 miles and you have to charge the thing again. It's like, yeah, but there's so much more to what these powertrains can give you.
Yeah, and it's all building blocks, right? The first Apollo rocket isn't the one that went to the moon, right? So you need to build these. And that's what's so neat about the Volt is they gave guys like us an electric car where we could enjoy the benefits of electric, but at the same time, just jump in it, gas it up, and actually road trip in it. And that was, it was actually a genius car for the time. And its time has probably come and gone now that we're in this new era of basically everybody's going to have a 300 mile EV now.
I just showed up in my garage. I have the Polestar 1.
Oh, wow.
Again, the 600 horsepower Volvo hybrid, gorgeous coupe.
Yeah.
Which is kind of exciting. Well, 75 miles of range is a lot, plus that twin charged 2 liter engine with, that's like high strung as all hell.
Yeah.
In a very pretty package. So Volvo's still got the hybrid thing happening.
Yeah. Have you driven any of the Korean cars yet? The Ioniq or the Niro or the Kona? Or
I drove a Kona EV for like 5 minutes and I thought it was pretty cool. I thought it was pretty nice, actually. Apparently, that's like a very legit car.
Very highly rated car.
Yeah. We will see. I thought maybe my wife was going to need a new car if she had a commute, but it turns out the new job she scored at Twitter is like a mile and a half from where we live. So she can stick to the old cars and the bicycles and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I wanted to about the Bonneville car, because you said you were worried about the wheel spin. Can you not easily program some type of traction control system?
Yeah, we're working on it, right? But it's a little
I use the word easily. Meanwhile, I know nothing about this.
Whip out the laptop.
Just traction control. Just traction control.
Bust out some lines of code.
Yeah.
It's interesting because traction control, you can imagine when they're writing these algorithms at the OEMs, they're testing them in rain and dirt and all these different conditions. And sometimes traction control will do very weird things. Same with anti-lock brakes, because they're not anticipating those conditions. And so for us to go somewhere in a car that's so much lighter than what the engine was designed for, the motor was originally designed for, on tires that literally have no traction, the smallest contact patch on a surface that is literally just ball bearings.
Yeah.
So we're going with low expectations for our traction control, and we're going to start the data gathering effort, the difference between wheel speed front to rear, and we've got GPS backup, and there's a lot of things that we'll be doing, but it will probably be a couple months before we go back, and we'll probably go to El Mirage to do more extensive testing with some very advanced traction control algorithms to take us to that, we want to build the fastest electric car in the world, right? We want to go faster than 314 as an official record, and bring the record back to Southern California where it belongs, instead of a school using out of the country foreign sponsorship money. This is Bonneville, right? That we got to do this, Southern California company. So that's our goal right now, and that's what we're working towards. So it's kind of crazy when you have this goal and you're building a vehicle and it's not even the vehicle that you're going to use to get to that goal. It's just kind of like a stepping stone and a data gathering platform. And fun, right?
Tons so if of fun. If you do well this year, you gather your data, you would build an entirely new car for the following go around for the heavier weight class.
Yeah, we have those designs underway. It's a streamliner. It's absolutely gorgeous. and wheels inside, you know, ground effect car, the whole entire carbon body sits like a half inch off the salt. You know,
awesome. It's got to be a fascinating experience because, you know, from the outside, these cars look simple, like they have one focus. Yeah. You don't need to worry about NVH. You don't need to worry about, you know, some aspects of drivability or whatever. But then you run into those problems like you're talking about where you go, how do we want to cool it? Oh, we want to close the body. How do you cool something with a closed body? And so it's like you think there's going to be fewer problems, but then there's very different ones that require very creative solutions.
Yeah. I mean, the closing the body thing too, you know, adding to that story, I was talking to one of the technical directors and again, they've been great. I was like, hey, just tell me all the rookie mistakes. So he runs through a bunch of the mistakes that the rookie team makes. And then he kind of segues into electric and starts talking about some of the mistakes some of the electric teams made. And one of the early guys went out there, didn't seal anything, and salt's conductive, and they actually created a short circuit from the salt dust, and big poof of smoke came out of their car and whatnot. And, you know, that kind of led us to these discussions, like everything has to be sealed up. We've been working with WD-40. They've actually been helping us out. We're on their pro board. So we give feedback into their products. We help them develop products specifically for like electronics. And I mean, you can't touch their original formula though, but that's, you know, that's what we wipe all the componentry down with to protect it against the salt. Puts that layer of film on. So when we're done, we'll be able to clean it without it going in and pitting the chromoly or anything like that.
That's so gnarly. It's a really like
salt's scary,
salt,
man.
Wires and batteries.
Yeah. Like, No, it's.
I live by the beach and like this, and I don't have air conditioning, so I cool my house with like open windows.
Yeah.
And about every 3 years, like this TV that's behind me here, that TV right there. About every 3 years, that TV just dies just from salt. There, it's like, man, fuck you.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I can imagine the intensity of that salt if it gets up in the car. Like, no, that's done.
Yeah. So we're sealed. You know, our top and bottom shells come down. They're completely sealed. The only opening in the whole body's in the back for the parachute. So, and we'll probably figure out a way to seal that even. Mm.
Well, hello, Finn.
Hi, kitty,
This is my cat, Finn. He's coming to say hello.
Nice.
Oh my God, he's stuck in my headphone wires. Come here, sweetie. So dream build. Someone hands you an unlimited budget. You're building a car for yourself.
What that unlimited budget thing is interesting.
Okay, no unlimited budget. You get $1 million. You get $1 million.
No, I like the unlimited budget. There's a story out there with JT Nesbitt and some other builders and stuff where they had some investors just give them unlimited money. And what they found out is they developed parts in the process that made more money and actually reduced the cost of the overall build.
Oh, okay.
Basically saying, because if you're an engineer, you're usually given those constraints, you know, like, hey, build this within budget and whatever. But if you're just an engineer and you're given, you know, full freedom to do whatever you want, you're probably going to develop things that don't exist that you wish you had. And right. So on an unlimited budget, I mean, that's the approach. I think instead of just going out and looking at a car, you'd back up one or two steps and say, okay, what don't we like about the components that we're using? You know, like, why can't we shift a Tesla, you know, into second at 150?
Yeah.
Right. So I would start with those things. I wouldn't start with like, oh, let's just go get a Mercedes 190 or some shit like that. You know, I would start with, the drivetrain. We're engineers, so that's what fascinates us the most. You know, the body is just something to put all our fun stuff in. But you know, I'm an off-road guy. I love riding dirt bikes. I bought a Pinsgauer a little while
ago. Oh, those are cool. Yeah, right? those are interesting. And that's a car. That's something you'd really want to make electric.
Yeah, the Pinsgauer is known.
Who gives a shit about that motor?
Right. And it's known for, I mean, it's one of the most effective climbing vehicles. I mean, these things can literally, there's videos of them on the internet, like driving over houses and stuff.
Yeah. And so I've seen one, it's sort of like a Unimog, but a little more utilitarian even than a Unimog.
Yeah. It's got four-wheel independent suspension, and it's got double ring gears in the differentials, double pinions, double rings. It's the most fascinating thing you've ever seen. And so I think something like that, with an electric motor where you could go out and really, you know, get into the hills and just do some really fun climbing with it, you know.
Did you convert yours, or is yours?
We're in the process.
Oh, you're good. Yeah, okay, we're in the process. Cool. I figured you would eventually.
Yeah, we got. You know, we kind of went through this period where the shop got really busy. We got a long customer wait list, like 5 years out, and we just, you know, our
heads were
just,
fucking years.
Yeah.
Oh my God! Good for you. That's a terrible problem. Isn't it?
Oh man, it sucks, dude. Like honestly, like if you came in and were like, "I want to do my Safari electric," I'd be like, does 2025 look good for you? And that's terrible. You
know, and that's the way terrible. Of the world, man.
No, it's terrible. I mean, think about how many restaurants are like that. You love this restaurant. It's great. And then all of a sudden they're so popular, you never eat there again because it just takes too long. And so we don't want to be those guys. So we just really, really focused on dialing in our shop. We've
hire some more people. I don't know.
Before you can hire people, you need a space to put them. Oh, yeah. And so we've been waiting on some other tenants in the building to move out, and they've finally all moved out. And so now we're sitting in about a little north of 15,000, about 16,000 square feet. We have a little two-story mezz and some stuff. So now we've got some more space. We brought in some more technicians, and we're kind of getting back to where we were, say, 5 years ago. We started up our EV show again, started doing some brief video, you know, of the builds and, you know, because we want to get this stuff out there, you know, even going back to the Bonneville car and, you know, these drag guys and these racers that just don't give you any details. You know, if you want to hear something funny, like walk up to a drag racer and ask him details about his engine, you'll just get a line of crap. Oh, it's a V6.
Yeah.
What? No, it's not. You know, but we are different because, you know, being a company, we're kind of trying to enthuse the enthusiasts, right? And the best way to do that is literally paint by numbers. Like, this is the battery that we use. This is, and so many people just will not diverge those. Even in the EV world, you know, we did Pikes Peak. We were hanging out with Munster Tajima, and very, very nice. But as soon as you asked anything technical, as polite as he could, no. You know, yeah, and that was it. You just weren't getting that data. And to this day, I don't know what kind of pack or anything. And you know, for all these guys kind of doing these unique events, we should be all together and talking and getting the details.
Well, I can understand why someone with a factory-backed ride like Suzuki wouldn't be talking about technical details.
Yeah, this wasn't Suzuki. This was GoPro and I think he was funding it himself. There was a Japanese company involved, I think a Japanese automotive. But this isn't the Suzuki run. This is his follow-up when he did the four-wheel drive electric, right?
I think I might have been conflating them. Sorry. But anyway.
We raced together the same year when he did his electric. The year before we raced, he got the 10-minute mark, and then he came back and tried to get 10-minute in electric. And that's the year I can famously say I beat Munster Tajima. I mean, his car might have lit on fire, but I beat Munster Tajima.
Winning is winning.
Winning is winning, right? Yeah. You know, people ask us how fast we go at Bonneville, and it's like, take the record and add 1/10 of a second to it, bro. That'll put our name in the books, and that's all we're trying to do. So,
yeah. I know. I know that it's highly variable answer, and it depends on what you're starting with. But I already know that people are going to ask, what is the range for a classic EV conversion?
You know, fantastic question. Everybody get your pencils out, because I'm going to make it easy. I'm not going to give you a fish. I'm going to teach you how to fish.
Okay.
So a typical classic car is a really good rule of thumb: 3 miles per kilowatt hour. Right?
Per kilowatt hour. I'm writing this math down.
For the nerds, that's roughly 333 watt hours per mile, right?
3 miles per kilowatt hour. Okay.
So now you would trend that down if you had bigger tires and, you know, Bronco body or something, and you'd trend that up if you had a little tiny Spider or something like that, right? You know, maybe 4 miles per kilowatt hour in a Spider, and maybe 2 in a classic pickup truck. But you know, if you're talking about classic cars just in general, like you know, BMW E30 or something like that, that's 3 miles per kilowatt hour.
Okay.
Now a kilowatt hour of energy is going to cost you about $250 street price for the good stuff, Tesla, you know.
So then you get 3 miles per $250.
$250, yeah. Or even $300. So it's almost $100 a mile of range.
$100 a mile of range. Yeah. Okay.
Nuts, right?
Yeah.
And then depending on the chemistry, the weight's going to vary a little, but a good average to use is about 12 to 13 pounds per kilowatt hour.
Okay.
So now you've got all the variables, you know how much it's going to cost, you know how far you can drive on it, and you know how much weight it's going to add to your car. There's always a point of diminishing returns. You know, people call up and like, how much range can I get out of this? And, you know, it's like, well, how long is a piece of string? It's really up to you. If you're doing a ground up build, you can put a 4-gallon fuel cell in it, or you can put a 20-gallon fuel cell in it. That's your prerogative. And the same is true with the batteries. So, you know, we've done hundreds of electric car systems for our customers. And I honestly don't think we've ever sold the same bill of materials twice.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, okay.
They're expensive systems. You're spending $20,000. You want something bespoke. You want it tailored to you. And there's a lot of stuff, you know, out here on the West Coast, you know, we're pretty cool. You might not get an air conditioner, but, you know, we do EVs for customers in Florida. And absolutely one of the first things on their list is an electric air conditioning system, you know.
Is that so, how, if on a, on a, like a, you know, on like a, an 80 kilowatt hour, 60 kilowatt hour battery, like how much does a, does an air conditioner really use versus moving a 3,000 pound car down the road?
So typically it's about 10%.
10%. Okay. That's not that bad.
Yeah. No,
that's not so bad. No. Do they work good? Those electric air conditioners?
Yeah. Yeah. So good. Sometimes I run it with the windows down.
Oh, nice. You know what I used to do with what's cool with the old cars is the cool shirt. Just like your cooling system in your Bonneville car. You just get the tank in the trunk, you throw the shirt on, you're good to go.
Yeah. I mean, Roger is running a cool shirt for sure.
Of course he is.
Yeah. There's, of course, no room in the car for it. So I think we're going to take like a little Red Ryder rag in or whatever, put the cooler and the battery, and then the, you know, drop the hoses, the dry brakes into the car, and keep them cool right up till we close the hatch, pull the dry brakes out, and you know, 10 minutes later, we'll probably want to be plugged in again.
Yeah, no kidding.
His fire suit, it makes him look like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. you know, I've raced Lemons for years, and, you know, Laguna Seca and the Pikes Peak and all that stuff, and SFI suit, you know. But what they require you to wear at Bonneville is on a whole nother level.
Like a 10-layer job, dude, or something?
It is, yeah. I've never seen that much material in a fire suit for
that's an awesome
sport. Yeah.
And then what's that solar panel trailer rig called?
Yeah. So, it's just kind of a thing that my friend built, and he's been playing around with it. He's been talking to some people with some commercial applications. The name of his company is called Tier 4 Solar. I don't think the trailer has a name beyond the solar trailer, but the key ingredient in it is it actively tracks the sun. In most solar projects, portable solar projects, don't actually activate the sun, or, you know, track the sun. So you go out there and you stand next to it, and about every 30 seconds you'll hear a little whir of a little screw drive, and it's got a sun, you know, sun sensor that's constantly checking the angle. And it's all simple parts. He built it with an Arduino, and, you know, just really simple.
It reminds
stuff.
Me of those like satellite dish arrays like you saw in movies like
the
Contact and
ones,
shit.
Yeah.
It's such a rad idea. I mean, when I drove the Tesla sand truck that you guys had a little hand in.
Right.
And I remember sitting there going, if I could tow this out to the desert and have a solar array to charge it and camp for a week, like, that would be such an amazing thing to do.
That's the future. If you don't think there's going to be a solar charging station at Glamis someday, you know.
Should be.
Right.
You should be too early. You should buy a piece of dirt right next to Glamis and build a big solar EV charging station. That would be awesome.
Yeah. You know, the gentleman, my friend that did Tier 4 Solar, he actually just put solar on, what's it called? Boardmanville, the big bar out there. And so they're running solar now.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And a backup battery and all that. So it's getting there. And there's another, we have a NASCAR race team based out that way, and they're playing with electric now, and there's, you know, a lot of guys warming up to it.
How the fuck do you how do you race a NASCAR electric?
I didn't say it was a NASCAR.
Oh, all right, whatever.
I said it was a NASCAR team. there's guys out there that, you know, and I think the NASCAR team thing was just to qualify them. You know, there's guys out there that are very embedded in automotive culture that have just recently turned on to this. Look at like BC Moto. Right. We all know.
Yeah. He's a psycho.
You know, we were up there. We went to a Hoonigan Burnyard event. I took the Beamer out. I think I did like 3 or 4 donuts, and you couldn't even see it anymore. I mean, the whole place was just smoked out. So I pulled out of the arena, and he comes running up and hugs me, you know, and he's like, I'm your new best friend. And he was, God, just what a neat dude. But we helped him. I mean, he immediately just snapped. He's like, I need to know more about this.
And his Porsche 935 thing that he built is bad shit.
Yeah, because he was in our office like that Monday morning, literally the next Monday morning, and we were designing the 935.
Yeah, that he said when it's really done, I can have a go. He keeps telling me it's not quite ready yet. I think he knows I'm a little critical, more critical than other people about his cars.
Yeah, he's, you know, and I think, you know, in all fairness to BC, the car was built and on the craziest short schedule for SEMA. And so what most automotive guys do, get it to show and then get it back and finish it. You know,
all done. Yeah, we've been there with the SEMA builds.
Everybody has.
It's like a 20-sided dice roll. It's like, well, it's going to happen.
I think it's so cool, though, to have, like, obviously you were really, really, really early in this space, and you're a great advocate for bringing electric power and enthusiasts together, because you're into cars, you're into racing, and you're into, you know, the interesting vehicles. And then you have people like Busy and, you know, other people in racing who are just, they just want to go quick, and they're into how the power is delivered. And they're not looking at it with this shield up of, oh, it's not gasoline, it's not the thing I like, and constantly pointing out the problems. They're looking at the positives of it, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, what we do get a little bit is people will shy away from it. You know, look at guys like BC, you know, these guys that have been in the industry for a really long time, very knowledgeable. And, you know, I've got friends like this through Racing Lemons and other sports that are very knowledgeable mechanics, and they shy away from the electric because they just don't know how to talk about it. They don't know the definition of the terms.
Yeah, I don't either. It's hard. It's
right. It's hard.
It's really confusing, dude. I figured out combustion kind of, and I'm bad at that shit too, but the watts and the volts and the amps and the ohms and like, I just don't have the vocabulary, and I keep trying to talk to guys like you, but it goes out the other ear the second I hang up the phone.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation, you know, just even on simple things. Like, look at the battery packs. We still get customers that are like, I'm supposed to run it all the way up and then all the way down. You're like, no, that was nickel cadmium. That was a different chemistry. This chemistry wants the exact opposite. It hates the top and it hates the bottom and it loves the middle. And we literally just trained a whole generation of people with their cordless phones, like, just drain it to zero and then charge it all the way. And if you do that to an electric car, you're really stressing out the batteries. And you look at companies like Tesla, where they and other companies, I know Bolt and whatnot, where you can set a charge limit that's reduced. So if you're daily driving it, you can charge the car like 80%, so you're not slaughtering your battery pack every night.
You had me on one more question that I wanted to ask you about, and then it went right out the other ear. You were talking about
that's been happening to me throughout this interview. I've been so frazzled working on this project, so
it came back.
Shoot it.
What about, you know, I'm sure you read these types of industry rags that talk about alternative energy and stuff, and
not really.
Sure, not interested in what, like, the next battery will be or the, next type
I
of
definitely
energy storage?
Read that, but it's typically in different. I think my biggest problem is when you come off saying, like, we're trying to sell this climate thing or we're trying to sell green energy or whatever, you're pretty much full of shit because you're trying to sell something. And anytime you're producing something, it's bad for the environment. So your product might be less harmful for the environment, but to kind of come off as like a battery's good for the environment is a little crazy.
No, there's like rare earth metals that have to come from somewhere.
Yeah, and they're working on that. There's been huge progress where they don't need those anymore, right? But I'm a fan of the term sustainable. Because, you know, you and I live in a time where we're really lucky. We get to see the birth of some of these cars, and we get to see this transition to these modern drivetrains and the electrification. Like, we've been able to see all this in our lifetime. And if you, you know, fast forward and just think, what is it going to be like in 50 years, you know, when the CARB has their way with the rest of the world and literally there are no combustion cars, what's that landscape going to look like for electric? Right. It's pretty neat because it's a sustainable thing. You know, you get into this, like I mentioned, running the air conditioner with the windows down. I typically wouldn't do that, but when I go home and charge the car, and I've charged on solar, so at this point the energy's completely free. Right. And it's so weird because it changes something in your head mentally. I'm more apt to stomp on the pedal. I'm serious.
Shocker. You're more apt to go through resources if they're totally free.
Yeah, shocker. Right? Shocker.
I have experienced this with marijuana, alcohol, cars.
No regulator. No, but it really changes it. I mean, you know, imagine land speed racing, right? Let's go back to Bonneville. Imagine land speed racing, what it's going to be like in 40, 50 years. I mean, we coined the term electroliner because we think everybody's going to have electric streamliners.
That's kind of a good, that's a good term. I like that term.
Yeah, you know, we want to be the Kleenex of the industry. And so, you know, what's it going to be like in 40 years? Are you going to have literally like, you know, these semis out there with these big solar arrays and you're working on your car under the shade of the solar array and, you know, running air conditioners, open air, and or what are those things they do at the NFL games, like the cool fans, cool zones.
Blast
could you imagine just running all of that stuff out there without the noise and the stink of a generator?
I mean, that would be great. It would be great. It would be great.
If and
that
sooner or later, they tell us we're going to run out of gas, you know.
Probably.
So they, but probably. That's, you know, the fear, whatever.
I hope that there's enough gas to keep my few old cars running. But I like EV daily drivers, and I like when people build cool shit.
Yeah. Well, with the EV more people that drive EVs, they leave more gas for your flat six.
True. Yeah. And there's a lot of cars that look really cool and ideally would be really cool, but their engine sucks balls.
Right.
And so everything is good about an EV bug or an EV Volkswagen microbus because the alternative is, and they're going to hate me for this, but fuck you, one of the shittiest engines of all time.
Yeah. Oh, there's others out there.
I don't care if you can take it apart in 12 seconds. That engine sucks.
You know, the Maserati bi-turbo comes to mind. There's
it's all about, if you give me $1 million and that I get to hand to you, I would make a collab between you and Jonathan Ward, $1 million, and it would be an Aston Martin Lagonda.
Yeah, right. We talked to Jonathan. We're real friendly with him. And one of our old employees started a company called Stealth and did a project with them on a one of the derelicts that they built a while back. Yeah, Jonathan's a neat guy. He's very much interested in it. He's very smart, though, and he knows what we know, that this isn't completely ready for prime time, right? It's still a little
edgy. He said the EV derelict that he built is a monstrous pain in the ass because the technology moves so fast that he always finds himself having to update it and do all this kind of shit to it, and he's not really equipped for that kind of thing. And he said, you know, he sends the car out to the customer and like every 6 months there's all new technology and he's got to come put the new shit in it. So he said it's
actually I don't know about that. I mean,
maybe,
you know,
he was being hyperbolic. I don't know, but that's what he said.
No, I think so. It depends on what they're doing in there. You know, they've got some sophisticated, you know, instrumentation and some things like that, and maybe they're playing with it. But I think just in general, it just takes a really long time to build an electric car.
And that's hard.
It's hard. You know, you look at the guys really doing it, and they're spending a ton of money to do it.
Is it the kind of thing that interested people could take up at home?
Yeah, absolutely.
Jack, is there construction happening in your house? Is there construction in your shop?
Did you know, I should mention to the listeners, we're building a Bonneville car. All right. And it's funny because I chatted with Zach before this, and I'm like, Zach, I'll give you 45 minutes, and we're about an hour.
Okay, we'll let you go back to work.
I'm good. I'm good. I love this. This is great. It's keeping me away from grinding in the back. It's real loud.
It's okay. An hour and a half is the show anyway, so we'll let you get back to building.
We are building the car. We're jamming away. We got a deadline. I mean, this would make good television, actually, because we truly are running around back there like, oh, shit, we got a deadline. And it's not a fake one, right? So it makes it real. But if
they always
want
to fake it, but you never really have to. You just got really to find someone who needs a car ready for an event.
Stress will find a car shop with a deadline, right? And that makes for exciting stuff. For anyone that wants to follow, you know, we got a Facebook and an Instagram set up under Electroliner. And of course, we're EV West. We've been around for a while, and we just started doing the EV show again. So
on Instagram, spell it out: evwest.com. That's all. The username is written out. EVWest.
There's some kid named Evan West out there, and if I ever find you, I want my handle.
How do we got? We got to coerce him without him really knowing.
I sent messages; they won't respond.
That's hilarious. No, that's okay. EVWest.
We're not big enough. We don't have the
blue check, right?
You know, bro, I still don't have a blue check on Twitter. I've been on that shit for like 11 years. Thanks, Michael. It's great talk to you again. Man. I have 100,000 spare dollars and 5 spare years, I'll be sure to get online.
Ah, no, we'll be able to do something cheaper than that. We'll do
electric
crazy,
electric safari would be very, very fun. I think.
Yeah.
I think Lee would hang me.
Dude, my dad's got his old Volvo P1800 that hasn't driven in 4 years, and the engine sucked when he had it. Like, I'm listening to this, I'm going.
Did you see the story that just broke that Volvo?
I did.
Yeah, in the camo wrap and all that. Yeah.
What happened? I didn't see what he's talking about.
So Volvo is running around town with a converted P1800, like mid-60s. It looks like, you know, 65 body style or something like that. And
it's like full – yeah, it's like full concept camo. It's electric. Yeah. It's got
– But there, you know, I mean, we did some stuff. You know, we did the Jaguar E-Types, not installation-y, but helped provide parts, you know, help provide parts for the Chevy Ecopo and – Ford and a lot of these projects, have supplied, you know, just parts to them. So there's a lot of neat things. Like, the manufacturers are actually doing neat things. You know, we've worked with Volkswagen last year. We did that bay window bus for Volkswagen, where we actually took, you know, along the lines of putting a Taycan motor in a Porsche, we took a Volkswagen e-Golf motor and put it in a 1972 bus.
Cool. Right? I bet that was very nice to drive.
Yeah, it was, well, it's not driving. It was a show car, and we took it down to LA Auto Show, and then it came back and COVID happened. And so the car is just basically sitting, getting ready to be finished up. It'll be a full driver. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it'll be a full driver. But it was one of those things where it was a show car. And then I think they decided it was such a hit that they came back and paid the additional money to make it a driver.
With those Volvos, like, I wouldn't be surprised, given the success of the lightweight continuation E-types, the Aston Martins, the DB5, the Goldfinger continuation. There is so much profit margin in doing these limited run classics, updated, factory, you know, authorized, whatever. You know, if Volvo came out and said, we're building 20 EV P1800s and they're $800,000 each. They'd be gone in 5 seconds. Yeah, they'd be gone in 5 seconds.
Snatch them up. Yeah.
But that's super cool, man. I love talking to you. We should make this like a pretty regular thing.
Yeah, thanks. And, you know, we'd love to have you drive the Beamer again. We put a Tesla motor in it, so it's a little bit more wild than the last
time. Yeah, that should be fun. I could do that. It's we should make a trip. Yeah, I'd like to make a trip. Is it got plates on it still? I can drive the street?
Yeah.
Cool.
We never have plates on it, but yeah, we still street drive it. Yeah. We're getting, it's funny. It's been at a paint shop forever because I ripped the wide body kit off of it doing a Hoonigan thing and smashed the rear a little bit. You know, I hit the meth trailer. Still awesome. Kills me. But yeah, so then we got another wide body kit. Now we're doing some paint work and a bunch of stuff on it. And then we decided we want to change some of the electronics. You know how this stuff goes.
Never ends. Well, when it's done, hit me up and I'll come down and we'll take it for a spin. Yeah. Thanks.
Shit, we'll let you drive the land speed car, dude. When's the next El Mirage event?
Nah. No, I'll pass on that.
Come on, Mr. 211. I got to admit, I don't have what it takes to drive this car. I think going 250 is just outside of my zone. It's outside of my comfort zone. And thank God we've got Roger Hickey to do this.
On the salt, I didn't even really feel it get fast until I cross 200.
Yeah, it's the stop you feel.
Yeah, it's
right.
Old thanks, dude. That's a great show. It's great to have you. And you know, go fast. Go out to Bonneville and go fast and have fun and learn something. Enjoy yourself. Yeah. Most importantly,
thanks, man. Really appreciate it, Matt. Thanks, Zach. Awesome.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me on the show. We'll see you next time.
The Smoking Tire Podcast is powered by Shout Engine. Get your own damn podcast at shoutengine.com. It's easy. All you need is a microphone, a connection to the internet, headphones, and something to say. Bye, guys.